Welcome to Last Letters Podcast, a show which asks each guest a simple question. If tomorrow was your final day on Earth, what would your last letter be? It began as a self-reflective question from the show's host, Jeremy Locke. A world traveler and retired Air Force photojournalist, Jeremy is 7-time Military Photographer of the Year and a Bronze Star recipient who has always wondered about his portraits. What would this person's advice to the world be?
Welcome to Last Letters. I'm your host, Jeremy Locke. This week, we have Sid Epps. Sid Epps is a family man and entrepreneur, businessman, civic leader, and a patriot volunteer. And he's kind of showed up today looking a little Santa Claus-ish with this white beard.
It's a little COVID beard.
First time I've seen you with a beard.
I know. First time I've had one.
How you been?
I've been doing great. Thank you very much. We're staying busy.
What's been keeping you busy?
Well, I'll tell you what, the Air Power Foundation and all the works that we're doing is keeping me busy these days. So we've got a lot of stuff that we're working with. The COVID deal kind of hit us hard, and so we're having to readjust for that. We travel. We've got a motor home, so Lou and I like to hit A&M football games, and so we're out doing some traveling also.
You're still able to get out there and travel around?
Yep, we are.
Tell me what that's like. What are you doing with the motorhome?
Well, you know, we've got a couple other friends that have motorhomes, and we travel together with them. Been to every SEC stadium over the past few years following A&M. Of course, this year they've combined it and reduced it all down, so we're just going to 4 games down at College Station. But we've got a permanent parking spot down there. And so Lou and I and then our other friends and all park next to us, and we put on a pretty good tailgate down there. And so,
and your wife Lou loves it?
Oh gosh, it's her motor home. She lets me drive it.
I had a not so great situation 2 weeks ago. I tried to incorporate my wife into one of my journeys and took her camping, and ooh, yeah, that didn't go so well.
You got to go glamping.
Yeah, she's more of a glamper.
That's so right. Well, roughing it is in this motorhome. So
yeah, that's how she'd like to rough it.
That's about it. That's exactly right. So we enjoy that, and it's good.
Tell me about your dad.
He was the manager of the theater in Arlington. And back then, when I was 5, 6, 8, 10 years old, the theater's where everybody went to. Theater meaning a movie theater. And he managed that and owned part of that. Well, on Friday nights, the parents would all drop their kids off, and they'd go out to dinner and have a drink. Dad always have to gather up the kids and drive them home when the show was over because parents didn't come back to get them. We became really close with the families in Arlington. When I grew up in Arlington, there was, 20,000 people. It was a great event doing things with him, learning how to cook, barbecue, all the stuff in the backyard. Everything was done in the backyard. We had great friends. Remember one time we were having a party at the house. We had a small house, but having a party out in the backyard, and all of a sudden it started raining. So what the heck is this? The fire department had come out, put a fire truck out front, and they were shooting the water over the house for entertainment for us. So, like I said, it was a small town. They could get by with doing little things like that.
Tell me about a special time that you can remember spending with your dad.
Okay. We'd go out to the Trinity River flows through North Arlington by one of the parks out there. But back then, there was nothing out there. He and I'd take and go out there with our .22 rifle. And he'd throw cans in the water upriver. And as those would come floating by, we'd shoot those cans. And those were just great memories of just Dad and him helping me learn how to shoot that gun and hit those cans. It's not a big deal, but it was a big deal as a young boy being there with your dad and experience that. We sat under an overpass where the highway went over, and we would sit out there and do that. So that's probably one of the more meaningful small items that I got to spend with Dad.
Do you remember when you're sitting there underneath the overpass, shooting .22, the cans and stuff? You ever remember any conversation that sticks in your mind or maybe any other time that you had with your father where he influenced you?
You know, Dad, he led by example in most cases, but when I would be with him and he would make sure that, be kind to people. I saw that in how he treated other people and how to manage your money, not at that particular moment, but at other moments, how to manage money, how to treat people. He wasn't a philosopher, but he would tell you how he worked with people, and I could see that. I don't know that there's a particular quote that I could gather from him. I remember not mowing the yard on time and him coming home and kicking my butt because I didn't get to get out there and mow that yard, you know, type stuff. He held us responsible and accountable for what we were supposed to do as far as doing things around the house or wherever we were going. He helped me arrange a loan so I could pay for my own first car. He made me pay for my gas, made me pay for my insurance. So I had to go get a job somewhere to do that. So that was building on a lot of the things that happened later in my life. I think my first job he helped me get was scooping ice cream at an Ashburn's ice cream deal for 75 cents an hour. But I think the thing there was not the money, but it was the setting you up to know how to deal with people and how to work, how to manage your time, and how to be committed to people for those kind of things. So very helpful with life lessons.
What did your dad teach you about opportunities in life?
He had two jobs that I know of. One was working, was owning and being part of the picture show, and then he moved over being the PR man for the local Arlington State Bank. So he worked at the bank. I said, well, how do you handle it? He said, I don't handle any money. I go out and meet people and greet people and get them to come to Arlington because he was on the Chamber of Commerce with Arlington. So from that standpoint, there was a lot of things that, you know, I would pick up on, and he would let me know when I saw opportunities. Even when I was going to college, opportunity to work at the post office, opportunity to work, opportunity to give back, opportunity to volunteer, opportunity that came up. That just kind of grew out of looking at things and watching for things and watching for opportunities and his encouragement. I would always ask him, what do you think about this or think about that? And he would say, well, if you thought about if you go down that road or go down this road, what you might encounter. He never really told me what to do, but he always helped me evaluate what I would do. The opportunities as they started presenting themselves, and honestly, I didn't reflect on them as opportunities till now. And I look back and I say, look at that opportunity. Because in my life, it was just happening, okay? It was just something that I was led, you don't want to do this, you want to do that. The opportunities that came were things that I didn't necessarily expect. Or if I did, it was something that I saw that would be something that would be helpful to the family, helpful to the community, helpful to what I was doing. I had great respect for my dad. I took his guidance and his thoughts that he would instill in me, his community leadership. He worked with Mayor Tom Vandergriff, who brought the Texas Rangers to town, who brought Great Southwest Industrial District to town, who brought General Motors to town. Those are all things that are in my life that took place that I could see that being done. So those were the examples that I was able to witness, and that my dad was doing that with other gentlemen in the community. And he would say, you know, these are the kind of things that you want to do as you grow up and as you have opportunities to do that, to give back to your community and make sure your community is healthy and that it's growing and that you've got good people there, you've got a good tax base. All that played into that part of it with him was more of, I think, the community side of it.
I love how you said that your dad kind of gave you advice, but he was a man that would walk the walk, kind of talk.
Oh, yeah.
Talk the talk. How did you know what you wanted to be when you grew up?
Oh, I still don't.
I love that. Love that.
That's a standard line everybody gets at my age. It was one of those things that I really didn't know. I was a business major at UTA. I didn't get to finish college because Vietnam War came along. My grades weren't great, so I joined the Texas Army National Guard and all that stuff. So I never finished college, but I was a business major, and I got enough. I only liked like 13 hours of graduating. But with that, I got enough of a taste of the things that I was able to be involved with. The Trammell Crow, being put with these incredibly successful companies, which is an opportunity that I would have never guessed. The opportunity came that they were going to develop a cow pasture in Mansfield, Texas. And they were going to put homes in there and a golf course and all this stuff. So I became the assistant project manager down there. And that's where I started learning about that side of business. As I did that, other things, I would see that would lead me to maybe if I did this or if I did that, that would lead me to anything I did. I wasn't necessarily looking for the next one. I was looking to be successful at what I was doing. I think that's real important. I think if you try to look too far down the road, you may lose the sense of what you're there for right now. So I was trying to be as successful as I could at anything that I was working at that point in time. And I did that for a number of years down there, met a lot of people, built a golf course. I sold memberships to the golf club for $100 and I got to keep 50. And I tell you what, and I was raising kids with that too. Anyhow, that was the Trammell Crow Company, which is well known here in Dallas. And that's the only area I worked in for them down there until we got that developed. And then I opened my own real estate company down there to benefit from the houses that we built and sold down there. I was leasing commercial property down. I don't know how far you want me to go with this. You got?
Oh, I'm enjoying myself just listening to this. I'm learning to see how I can find my opportunities.
So I've got a real estate company, and they've got we had a strip center down there. We're trying to see how we're going to fill that up. I said, you know what we need in here? We need a Radio Shack down here. We don't have a Radio Shack. That'd be the best place to have one of these things. So I go up to the Radio Shack in Fort Worth, and I start talking to them. I take them down. I start selling them on this deal and some all that stuff. And the guy said, you know, you need to come to work for us because of your passion for what you do. You know, why don't you come to Radio Shack and we'll be at the home office here in Arlington? I said, you know, that's not a bad deal because now I'm off of commission of selling and all that. And now I've got an income. And that was nice with the family. So I went to work for them. I got to know Charles Tandy, incredible guy. And I'll tell you, it's a funny story. So I had done really well, and they had a banquet, and I was one of the people that they gave an attaboy to while we were up there. So they gave an attaboy at the hotel. And as we're walking out, Lou's walking with me, and Charles Tandy walks up. He looks at Lou, and he said, hey, honey, wouldn't you like to have a fur coat? And she said, well, yeah. He said, you better go get her a fur coat. You're going to have to sell more. So he didn't come to me. He went to her and said, hey, why don't you get a fur coat? And then he turns to me and said, well, you better get the fur coat.
That's a good motivator.
Right there. So anyhow, I was with them for 10 years, but I had the opportunity to move to Charleston, South Carolina. And then from there, I had to sell. I had to open. This is where my drive comes from. My quota for opening Radio Shack franchise in the southeastern United States was one a day. 30 a month.
Wow.
In a 7-state area. And so I had some guys out on the road, and I did that. I did that for 2 years. They said, good job. We're going to send you to Portland, Oregon, and you're going to manage the northwestern part of the United States, and you're going to oversee everything up there. So I had Montana, Wyoming, Washington, Oregon, and Alaska, and I traveled over there. I kept my skis in my car. We'd go to Montana. I'd go ski and work. That was great. So then they promoted me back to Fort Worth, and I had all the Radio Shack franchises west of the Mississippi. That was my responsibility there. What I learned from Radio Shack, I used today. And everybody was on a P&L statement.
What's a
profit and loss statement? You got paid, you got a base pay, but all your money was earned how you controlled your region and your area. So I had to know how to manage expenses, how to manage sales, everything about a profit and loss statement at, you know, a young age.
Did you know how to do this going into this?
No.
How'd you go through this?
Well, you move in this position and they put you with the accountant in there and say, hey, if you're going to get paid, here's how you do this. And let me show you the line items and what you can control. Funny story again. I'm managing my region and it comes Christmas time. And they said, okay, at Christmas, we go out to all the distribution centers, say thank you to all the people, you know, shipping everything out to the stores. And so we're going to take the company jet. Oh, man, this is great. Company jet, we go to L.A., we go all over the country in the company jet. December, I said, great. We had this fantastic trip and gone out and thanked all these people. So in January, I got my P&L statement. Hell, there's $22,000 charged to me. I said, what is this? That was your plane ride for going out.
You gotta be kidding me.
So you get charged back for your part of the plane. So that's how I learned how to manage and use P&L statements. And I did that. And today, I still do that with our nonprofit, Air Power Foundation, and everything else. So all the companies, all the businesses I did since I was with Tandy at a young age, that has been probably the one of the best things that I ever learned was how to manage a profit. What it did, it told me where the money was going, who you were paying, you know, if you were overpaying, underpaying, what you had. I mean, it's just everything. So people use those.
It sounds like a very successful time, you know, yes. Knowledge-wise. I mean, there had to be some scary times if you're not meeting your quotas. Or what was something that kind of scared you or motivated you?
I enjoyed traveling, but being away from the family and Lou having to deal with it. One of the things, when I moved to Portland, and I got 2 days' notice. And what was scary is she had to sell the house, sell the car, sell the boat. All that stuff had to take place. So those were scary moments for that. I don't think I was ever fearful of not having a job or not working. I think the fear was having enough to take care of everybody. It's not all financial. It's also community, being accepted in the community, knowing people, meeting people, that part of it that would be there. I had to compete for those jobs. So there's times I'd come in interviews, I'd go home, I'd say, what if we don't get this job? What are we going to do? What's that going to do for us? After 10 years, I decided to leave. That was a huge decision to be made. That was very scary. That took me a long time to decide to do that.
How'd you decide that?
I started weighing where I was and what my upside was there, which was good. But then I looked at going into an entrepreneur with my brother into the real estate part of it and the options that were there and available for me to do that. And I decided that the corporate lifestyle, you know, some people corporate is you got to do things corporate wise. And I got tired of that part of it. I wanted to be more of on my own. I spent many a night up worrying about that, but basically more praying about it for leadership and direction of that decision to be made. And after I made that decision, I had buyer's remorse at times. Because I would end up maybe not having a good month or 2 months or whatever. I'd say, God, I wish I had that paycheck back, you know. And I'd say, I'd look at the family, I'd say, well, we're going to have to kind of be careful right now till I get this done. But then that kind of worked itself out. And I became very busy with the apartments and all that with my brother. You know, he was an inspiration to me also. He was a true entrepreneur, a true real estate developer. He was out there on his own. And so I saw that and I said, that's something that I think I would like to do also, but in a little different way. When I left Radio Shack, and I had pretty good stock and also I had a pretty good seed money to start from with that. But again, trying to make sure we took care of the family. When you say scary part, always in the back of my mind, whatever I was doing or whatever we're doing, whatever decisions had to be made to make sure we had the money coming in to support us. We didn't live a lavish lifestyle or anything, but, you know, taking care of four kids takes care of four kids and all. And Lou wasn't working at the time.
There's risks in your life. And I think
Yes.
You kind of talked about how your dad walks the walk and yeah. Showing through example. And what do you do when risks come like that?
I have to think through those risks, and then you don't have an option. You have to meet them head on, okay? You don't say, here's a risk. Am I going to take it or not take it? If you're going to go that way and you make that commitment, then you've got to figure it out. So that's where you become figuring things out. How do I do this? How do I do that? How do I make this work or not work? And I got to make it work. I don't have a choice of failing. I've got to make it work. That doesn't say I didn't ever fail, but not to the standpoint of fail and lose everything. If you didn't get the promotion you thought you were going to get, so you would get the money or whatever, then you had to figure out how you were going to make that happen. Risk in the oil and gas business was huge that I got into later on. The risk part of stepping out on your own, you have to have that self-confidence and have a partner that supports you. So Lou supporting me and me having the self-confidence to do it, Lou and I'd sit down and talk about it. She's my partner. When we would do anything, when I would end up going anywhere, she was as much a part of my decisions as to leaving, quitting, whatever I did. as I was. I just had to have that drive within me to make sure that would happen. And having confidence in that I was being led in the right direction by God. I mean, at that time, I probably didn't know that, but I look back and I go, you know, I was really helped along a lot because I really didn't quite know how to do that, but I figured it out with some help.
How did Lou and you meet?
Lou and I, we went to college together. She dated one of my fraternity brothers. She always wanted to date me. No, she didn't. So I called her up one. She sent me a Christmas card one time, and I said, what is this? You know, I called her on New Year's Eve. I said, hey, you want to go out tonight? And she said, I've had a date for weeks. What are you insulting me with that? And calling. I said, well, I'll tell you what, I got tickets to the Cotton Bowl tomorrow. Would you like to go to the Cotton Bowl? She said, I'll be home in time for the Cotton Bowl. She's a big sports freak. So we go to the Cotton Bowl. That was our first date. We got married 2 months and 10 days later.
Really?
Yeah, less than 3 months. And that's been 50 years ago. We didn't know at the time, but we were brought together and we made our commitment. And in the commitment we had together to help each other and stay married, I use that as one of those examples of not knowing really what I should be doing, but I got help and she did too in us coming together for that. But back to the risks, and that was a risk, a big risk. I didn't know what I was getting, neither should she.
Looked like it paid off for you.
Paying off. I'm married up too. So anyhow, she's been a huge part of helping me both internally, mentally, physically, of how to accomplish and do stuff. She's a motivator. Get out there and get that done, you know, type stuff. The risk factors have always been there, but you try to minimize them by making the right decisions and the right opportunities come along.
Do you feel we as a society, do we take bigger risks back then or do we take bigger risks now?
Oh, that's interesting. I think back then, the risk that you took back then were, you could kind of see some of that as what was happening.
What do you mean like see some of that?
I think you could, back then, there was only, if you were going to go do this, you knew who the banker was, you knew what the business was like, you knew what the real estate market was. You know, you could kind of weigh those risks if you were going into business or if you were starting a company or whatever else. I think now the variables are so great. I think the competition is so great. If you start a .com, so did everybody else start the same .com. So it's up to you to outsell everybody else to make yourself, you know, the premier whatever business it is. So I think the risk today, to me, would be greater than back in those days. Of course, you have access to more information now that you have. But back then, you could kind of measure out what the risks were and who your competition was and what you would have to do to make that happen. I think today is a little bit different than that. You have people jumping in, jumping out, competition-wise and all that. I don't think I'd want to start a business again right now. I've started three, and that's enough. And all of them have worked out well, but not because they had to be managed pretty hard. I was on the phone calling the lawyer for file bankruptcy. I mean, we got to the point after 9/11, we've installed fiber optic voice and data wiring. Well, all the companies that we installed for shut down, and they weren't making any capital improvements in their buildings or anything. We were at a loss. So we had to let go a lot of our people. That's the fear. I mean, I was fear, real fear back then. What am I going to do if I file bankruptcy and I lose my revenue, I lose my income, I lose my company? Now, what are you going to do in a time when it's 9/11, there's no businesses out there? How do you become creative? So we had to lay off some people. And here's how hard that was. We started that company and we had it for 15 years. The guys that started with us, I watched them raise their kids up to be in high school, okay? And then 9/11 to come along and have to ask those guys to step aside so we could keep the company going. And then rehire them hopefully later on. Those were the fears. Those were the things that were just eating at you all the time. Picked up the phone, ready to call the attorney. And I said, you know, I'm not going to do this. We're going to figure this out just like we have. So I went to our vendors that we owed money to. and worked with them. I went to the bank. We got put in special assets. You guys aren't going to make it, da-da-da. Well, we did. We worked through every bit of that. We ended up better off than we ever were. But it took sitting down with a plan, how are we going to make this work? A lot of people, I think today, a lot of companies, if they don't do it, we'll quit. We'll go do something else. A lot of marriages, same thing. It's not working out. Let's leave and we'll go do something else. Instead of trying to stay with that. But I just couldn't do that. We did have a lot of people that still work for us. And I got to protect those people, protect their families as well as my own. So I think that's part of that inspirational from my dad. Okay, way back then that was instilled in you don't give up. You fix it. You find out how to make it work. Okay, because I could see him, you know, making his stuff work that he was involved with, not giving up on the city, going out and getting General Motors, going out and working hard to get that stuff. That was one of those things in, that I learned from him, not knowing until I had to do it. And then reflecting back now, where'd that come from? And then I start looking back at that and looking back at my family, protecting my family's name. Like I said, my integrity, my name, my bond, shaking my hand. That's what's going to happen. And I've done that with the bank and I've done that with the vendors. And I was going to make sure that we tried to make that work. I did it with my employees to make sure their families could grow up and their kids could continue to go to school. I took that on as a personal obligation.
Talk to me about a handshake and the integrity of a man. What does that mean to you?
That means that I make a commitment to you. If I tell you I'm going to be here at 7 o'clock, I'll be here at 7 o'clock. If I tell you that I'm going to do this or do that, I shake your hand. In the oil business out there, it was a lot of handshake deals about what you were going to do. It means everything to me. If I tell you something and I give you a handshake on it, then that's what's going to happen. From my standpoint, I'll do whatever I have to do. But usually I wouldn't give a handshake unless I know that's something that I'm going to be able to do. My hand is my bond. I have the obligation to make it happen. But I'm more concerned about the people I shake hands with, how they view me. Will they come back to me? Will we become partners? Will we continue to be friends? Will we be able to continue to do things? Will we be able to continue to raise our families together? If I break that bond, then a lot of that starts to go away or could go away real quick. When I shake your hand and I tell you something, that's what's going to happen.
I absolutely love hearing that because as a photojournalist, you know, I'm meeting so many different people and asking to be a part of their lives. I always say that too many times we're heads down and we're into our phones, but there's nothing greater than meeting somebody, looking them straight in the eyes and having a nice handshake to have that bond.
Yep. I sold my oil and gas wells. So a guy, we sat down at a table and we were talking and he said, hey, I want to buy your wells. I said, okay, how much? So we did all that. So we turned around, took a little cocktail napkin, sat it down. We wrote down everything we said. Shook hands. He took it to the attorney and that was the end of it. So we shook hands on making that deal work and we put it on a cocktail napkin. He was a man of his word and I was a man of my word. There wasn't any arguing afterwards. We all knew what we were going to do and went forward with it.
Bring me up to speed, your kind of last working, as you will, before you retire.
With Southwest Networks, we were very successful. To us, $9 million. We were having very good years and all. I'd go into the office sometimes. I'd sit at my desk and I'd say, I don't have anything to do. The company's running really good. You know, we've got everything going right. My partner was the guy that was helping run the technical side of it, and I was running the business side of it. We had the business side going smooth. He had the technical side going. So he comes into me one day and says, you know, you're not doing anything. I said, yeah, I know. He said, why don't I buy you out? I said, that's a great idea. So we sat down and we negotiated over a few months and came up with something that worked for both of us. When we sold out in 2008, that's when I started having some time. I always hear about people that retire and they go play golf. Well, they won't play golf.
Well, you built golf courses.
I built golf courses.
Yeah, you don't need to go.
And I've had back surgeries. I've had 5 back surgeries and all that stuff. So golf wasn't anything I wanted to do. Looking around at something meaningful, And I think that's when that opportunity came to me. Again, opportunity is when Lou, she worked for the CEO, and we had a dinner at the C.R. Smith Museum. And I went out there, went, okay, you know, go out there and have dinner. There was two guys that were there, and one of them was John Kinnear. John talked to me all about the military, support of the military, and what they did. And I've always admired the military. My dad was in the Army Air Corps. He was a radio operator on a B-24, but he was a trainer over here. He never had to go overseas. So I was exposed to that. I mean, when he came home, he brought his little helicopter radio. He had brought his cap home, his headsets home, and all that. And I was just amazed at all that stuff. That was some of the personal stuff we talked about. Went to meet with John Kinnear, and he started talking about military. All these things kind of came back. It was, maybe I can, this is something I can really support, because I never really served. But I had great admiration for our military and their families. I didn't know how much they did. I didn't know how much they gave. I didn't know what their families went through until I joined the council and started being involved and going out to the Joint Reserve Base and seeing the guys out there and what they did, what their jobs were. And then in 2009, I took a trip to Iraq. Now, I went to Balad, and then they went down to Baghdad. So while I was in Balad, we met with a lot of people there at the base, but then we were taken outside the wire in MRAPs. And when we went outside the wire in the MRAPs and actually went to the FOB, forward observation bases. I went to FOB Palawada.
Look at you. You know all the terms and everything.
I'm telling you.
Love it.
So I go to FOB Palawada. We're out there on Easter, and we drive up, and I see where they live. I see how they're eating. I see the camaraderie that they have, but they still aren't home. They're still living in, you know, not the conditions you and I would like to live in. And they asked me, I said, what are you doing over here? You're a business guy. What are you over here for? I said, I'm over here to thank you, to give you a hug and tell you we love you. And that the American people support you, even though what you see on TV is not that way. And so our group went over there, and it made more of an impact on me than it did on those guys that were over there.
You can see my eyes swelling up right now.
You know, you've been there. You've seen that. And so that was where I made that conversion to being all in on whatever I could do to support the military when I get back home. And that's why I've dedicated my life since 2009 to doing that. And anything that I could do to help raise money, go out to the base and help the families, go to the clinics, go wherever we've got to go, help our organization do more and raise more money and do more stuff so that we can do more for them. But actually making that trip over there and seeing how those guys were fighting the war. As we came back from FOB Palawada, before we got back, the MRAP, an hour behind us, got hit and killed the guys in that on the same road that we were on. And so we got back and found that out. That was also moving that these guys really do lose their lives over here just driving down the road. We went to, castle?
Saddam.
Saddam Hussein's and his kids where the lake surrounds the...
Yep.
Yeah, went out there and saw that and saw how they lived versus how the people...
In Baghdad, right?
In Baghdad.
You know, I was one of the first ones into that area, and we were the ones that found Uday's lions. And
oh, is that right?
Yeah, we fed the lions from animals that were running loose on the little deers and stuff. Yeah.
An incredible experience that still impacts me today in what I do. Working with the Air Power Foundation is very, very, very rewarding for me. Seeing what we do and what happens to the organizations that we support. Last year, we supported 72 different nonprofit military support operations. We were able to affect a lot of people's lives and little stuff, big stuff. It didn't make any difference.
Tell the listeners what Air Power Foundation is.
Air Power Council started in 1958. It started in Fort Worth supporting Carswell Air Force Base. It was not a 501c, which is tax donation. In 1999, we realized we need to raise money to help the military men and women. So we formed the Air Power Foundation in 1999. There's 11 of us on the board, and our job is to help raise funds, and we're just a pass-through. We raise the funds. People make an application to us for a donation. We vet them out to make sure that that money is going for the right reason to the right people for the military. Once we decide that, then the board will vote to provide that money to those people. Armed Services YMCA is an organization that we support. We put 500 kids a summer through summer camp while their parents are working. So we do that. We do service dogs. We provide service dogs and train the service dogs and get them to the right people. Gold Star families. We do a lot with children and Gold Star families for those kids. We do a lot with Folds of Honor. We do stuff with Gary Sinise Foundation. Moonlight organization out of San Antonio, that's for severely burned people after they come out of the burn unit. They have an organization, a support unit. So we help fund that support unit down there for that. There's little things that we do, and there's the larger things we do, but the little things really, really count. We do an organization out in Colorado. They take Gold Star children, and they pay for them to ballet, dancing, whatever they want to do. We pay for them to do that from the time that they lost their parent until they're 18 years old.
And a Gold Star family is?
Oh, a Gold Star family is a family that's lost one of their parents in the war on terror. They've paid the ultimate price, one of the family members has. And so the other family member is left with the family with the children. Those are the Gold Star families, the Gold Star children, and that's who we like to support more than anything.
Absolutely amazing organization. Yeah. I'm involved with it as much as
I can. Yes, you are. And thank you so much. I meant to say
I'd love to hear one of those moments where you had to come home and go, hey, Lou.
We hit a home run.
Yeah. Yeah. Something that just touched your heart that you've witnessed. I've witnessed it.
I know.
Probably the proudest I've ever felt to be a military person. When the Gold Star families come in during Snowball Express, they get presidential motorcades and
that's right.
Everybody comes onto the streets and is clapping, saluting. I've never felt prouder to be a veteran or in the military than
seeing that.
Than those.
Well, you know, knowing that we've bring in the recipients, those guys just are awesome. When we are able, and I think that's probably coming home and saying, Lou, you won't believe it. We've got these guys coming in, and we're going to take good care of those men because we'll do anything for those recipients because of what they've done for us.
Tell me about it. It's like one of your greatest accomplishments is getting the Medal of Honor Recipient Museum here.
That was incredible. Doc Ballard, a Medal of Honor recipient, is on our board. And so I talk to Doc all the time, and we were having dinner after a board meeting one night. We're just chatting. He said, the Medal of Honor Museum is looking for a location. He said, we got it narrowed down to about five places. I said, well, how about this area? He said, no, they're not on the list. I said, wait a minute, why not? He said, well, nobody approached them or whatever. He said, we've got San Diego, we've got Denver, we've got New York, we've got Washington, D.C., and some on the East Coast. I said, wait a minute, we need to be in on this deal. He said, well, so I'll give you the guy's name, you know, to call. So I left that night and I went home. That's probably one of the deals I told him. I said, you won't believe this. So I called my good friend, Steve Cavender. He and I have been in school again since fourth grade. He's very close friends with the mayor of Arlington, Jeff Williams. I said, Steve, I just had this dinner and here's what they're looking for. I said, would you contact the mayor and see if Arlington would be interested? He called me back in about 10 minutes. He said, the mayor said he is all over this. Get the information to him, whatever it could be. So I called and got one of their front men who was in Houston. It was flying somewhere, but he was having a layover in a DFW airport. I said, get him over. I got to get him in with us. So there was five of us met with the mayor. The mayor gave him a presentation of Arlington that really caught his eye and put the wheels on, hey, we got to look at something else. We got to look at Arlington. So that's when I met Joe Daniels and talked to Joe Daniels, and we got him come down. I'm telling you, my conversation with Steve and the mayor, and that started the wheels turning. Talk about a can-do city back from when my dad was there. He unleashed the business development people on the Medal of Honor Museum. We had a number of meetings. We had all of the Cowboys and Jerry Jones and the Rangers, and I mean everybody that was anybody in sports or anywhere around here, and made the presentation to them about this being probably one of the most patriotic areas in the country. We ended up between Denver and Arlington. And so we each got to give another presentation on this. And I don't want to shortchange what all Arlington did. I mean, it's unbelievable because I helped make that introduction and then turned it over to these guys, and they went all bore. But I'll tell you a behind-the-scenes story. I was driving out through the countryside, and I get a call, and it's Joe. And he said, if you got a few minutes to talk to me? I said, well, of course, Joe. So I pulled over. He said, tell me what you really think. Will we really get support? Are you guys just blowing smoke to try to get us there? I want to know what your commitment is. So I made the commitment to Joe from Air Power Foundation, from me, committed the city because I know who the city is and who runs it. And Joe and I had about a 20-minute conversation, just he and I. I'm out in the country. He's on his phone in New York or whatever. He said, that's what I wanted to hear. That's all I want to know. After that conversation, I think they went back and talked among themselves about, I don't think that made the deal, but I think it helped Joe understand who we are, because I'd been working with him for several months, but understand our heart, our soul, and our patriotism to support the museum. For whatever reason, the museum got selected. Tremendous support from the community, from the state and nationally, because people want to get involved with supporting the Medal of Honor Museum, not just because they're Arlington, but because it's the museum. So nationwide, people want to be supportive of the recipient's museum.
Amazing men.
Oh, my gosh.
The stories are unbelievable.
And, you know, and it's
got, they're so humble.
And those guys are just unbelievable. And like you said, they're all humble. They're not there for what they did. They're there to support the military and support the other men and women that serve. And these guys are just tremendous. And I'm so blessed to know a number of these gentlemen and be able to work with them on different projects that we do.
When it's your time, like it's going to be all our times, and you get up there and you see your dad, what are you going to say?
That day's coming, you know, and I look forward to that. I look forward to the time I have left here. I think I've made the best of the time I've been here. I want to continue to do that. Like I said, right now my passion is supporting the military and my family. Those are the two things that are on my mind. I'll tell you that from a military support standpoint, there's stuff every weekend that the foundation is doing right now. So there's something going on all the time, and it just thrills me to death that we're able to do that and that we've got such great support, not only from the community, but from our volunteers. That takes a lot of volunteers. Skyball, for instance, we have 1,500 volunteers that work that. And we're so grateful for you and bringing your photographers in, because you guys do all the photography work. And then we use that the rest of the year to put together our brochures and our books and everything we do. You guys are professionals, and then, you know, and you all volunteer your time to do that. The moment of capturing those people that you guys do, it's not just walking around taking pictures. It's capturing the moment of these people talking to each other. You can read in their eyes and in their faces what they're communicating with each other. So it's just not taking pictures. It's taking.
It is the proudest one day out of every year that is the gala night, because I get to get dressed up and put on my military tuxedo, and you just feel proud to wear that.
The support from you and from the donors and the sponsors we have, that's what keeps it going.
Good. Sid, what came to mind when I reached out to you and asked you to write this letter? I'm sure as the CEO, I mean, you must write tons of letters.
Well, I write some over the past, have done that, but I've never been asked to write one about me and my life like that. Most of my letters are business letters or writing somebody else or whatever, but to do that reflection as a last letter, first thing I thought was kind of morbid at the first, But then when you start thinking about it and what you ask for, it was really self-reflective of things that I would not have thought of unless I was put in the position to write that letter. I really reflected on that. I found it very rewarding to look at some of the stuff I've done in the past, family and business and all the things we've done. Very seldom do you have an opportunity to really put that all in one place and one perspective.
Well, I'd love to hear your last letter, if you don't mind reading it for us.
No, I'd love to. Let me preface it a little bit, because when you asked me about that, I was trying to think, well, who do you write that letter to? Do you write it to your family? Well, my family kind of knows some of the stuff that I need to put in there. And so I spent some time thinking about that. And the person that doesn't know as much about me that I would like to have is my dad. He died when I was a very young age. And so he doesn't know what's taken place, at least from this side. And so that's where the letter was written to my dad to explain what I've been doing.
How about it?
I start off with there's a number of opportunities. So I wanted to define opportunity because that's what I see in my life. A lot of opportunities came along. So opportunity is a noun. It's a set of circumstances that makes it possible to do something. And so from that perspective is where I developed the letter. So here we go. Dear Dad, I want to update you about my life and career path. It's hard for me to comprehend that you passed away when I was 27 and you were just 61. Today, which was a couple of days ago, was my birthday, 72. I'm going strong. I'm 11 years longer than you made it. What I learned from you in those short 27 years has guided me. You taught me to care for others, cherish family, love our country and God, respect everyone, and be involved in our community. I've always loved how you were such a people person and seemed to know everyone. I've experienced many remarkable life lessons in the years since you've been gone. No doubt you had a hand in my journey and were watching over me. I'm writing this letter to tell you about the wonderful opportunities that have come my way. You know, Lou and I have twin girls, Shelby and Kelly. They were two when you last saw them. A few years later, we had a son, Brian Sidney, and a daughter, Katie Lou. Great kids, you would have had so much fun with them. I know you're as proud of them as I am. I remember someone asking me what my motivation for success was, and I said, looking at my children every night. I remember going in there at night or in the morning, I'd see those four kids in bed, and let me tell you, that's a motivation to get up and get going, I'm telling you. Dad, soon after you died, I went to work for a great company, Trammell Crow. For several years, learning real estate development, even building a golf course that you would have loved to play on. This country club and housing development was in the small country town of Mansfield. It provided so much growth for Mansfield, and I had tremendous pride in my work. An opportunity became available for me to join another successful company, Tandy Corporation Radio Shack, based in Fort Worth. I started Radio Shack at their headquarters in Fort Worth, and after a year, I received a promotion and moved to Charleston, South Carolina. 2 years later, I received a better promotion and moved to Vancouver, Washington. Wonderful places to live, and Mom loves visiting us. Every time we moved, I felt you nudging me to be involved in our community and church. We made lifelong friends in both cities. Our last move was back to Fort Worth, home. It was a timely move because Mom was sick and we were able to be with her before she passed away. Like you, I have an entrepreneurial spirit. After 10 years of traveling and being on the road with Radio Shack, I decided to create my own opportunity to enjoy time at home. I cashed in my Tandy stock and joined Bubba, my brother, in managing buying, selling, and remodeling over 1,500 apartments in Dallas. At the same time, I acquired and operated oil and gas wells in Palapena County. This personal business allowed me to spend time with our family and be a fan of our children's events, while also enjoying day trips to check on wells. You would have enjoyed traveling me through the countryside. Well, Dad, years later, another opportunity came along. Can you believe that? This time, a fiber optic and wiring technician approached me to become a partner in a new business. As with every decision, Lou and I prayed about it, what to do since this could be a financial risk. God clearly spoke to Lou, and she told me, I need to take the leap. Southwest Networks, was created, and we grew from 3 employees to over 100 employees in 3 years. We had offices in Arlington, Houston, and San Antonio, and annual revenue of over $9 million. It was a small family-owned company. After 15 years, timing was perfect, and I became a retiree at the age of 60. Listening to God on the decisions to start this, Southwest Networks had now paved the way for me to retire. Dad, now is a good time to bring you a quick family update. Lou is a stay-at-home mom raising our amazing children, volunteering at the schools, volunteering at church, driving endless carpools, and loving every day. We had a full, blessed life with 4 very active kids. When our youngest turned 16 and could drive, Lou, at that age of 40, went to work for American Airlines. Okay, fast forward to when I sold the company back. In May 2008, Lou took me, kicking and screaming, to an American Airlines dinner, honoring our military. At that point, I didn't know what. So she said, "You got to go to this dinner." And I said, "Well, I really don't care about that." But she took me. She worked for the CEO of American Airlines and had a wonderful program for our active military veterans and their families. Seated at our table were 2 members of the Air Power Foundation, a military support organization. Great dinner conversation led to me becoming interested in volunteering with their nonprofit. This dinner had a huge impact on my life. The Sunday after the dinner, our pastor talked about a passion and follow where God is leading you. You won't believe it, Dad, but I was presented with another wonderful opportunity. I joined the Air Power Council, supported by the Air Power Foundation, and immediately found myself deeply involved in a rewarding mission to help our military. I found my passion. I was engaged and happy to become part of their leadership. I served as vice chair, then chairman of the Air Power Council. I was appointed to the Air Power Foundation board, and after a couple of years, appointed to vice chair. Being with the foundation took me to places all over the world where I met so many heroes. Easter one year, we helped sponsor a group to Iraq to meet the soldiers on the front lines. We ate with them, hugged them, listened to their stories, took supplies for them, and also took much-needed supplies to the school children in Iraq. Such a humbling experience. I'm now serving as chairman of the board of the foundation. It's an amazing honor to serve. Each year we host a spectacular fundraising event honoring our military. Each October, over 3 days, we host 10,000 patriots. We've raised over $20 million to date, and all the money goes to our military and their families. The leaders of our foundation are all volunteers. One year we honored those who served in World War II, and I proudly posted your picture on the wall of heroes. Uncle Seeb was able to attend, and he was in cloud 9 when we honored his service. Good stuff, Dad. I know my letter is getting long, but I have one more exciting achievement to share. With my foundation work, I've been blessed to meet and become friends with several Medal of Honor recipients. During a lunch with Doc Ballard, a Medal of Honor recipient, he mentioned that the Medal of Honor Museum was doing a national search for a city to locate their museum. I immediately decided it needs to be in Arlington, Texas. After all, I am the son of the first president of the Arlington Chamber of Commerce. This area loves America, our military, and it's a natural fit. You remember my friend Steve Cavender? He helped me set up a meeting with the mayor of Arlington. Our beloved city of Arlington is now the home of the Medal of Honor Museum, a national treasure. A proud moment. The city of Arlington has always been a can-do city. You paved the way. As you can see, the life lessons you taught me have built on each other. Learning to work with others, living a life of integrity, being good for your word, serving others. These are traits you instilled in me, helped me take advantage of every God-given opportunity that came my way. Dad, I saved the best for last. Lou and I will celebrate 50 years of marriage next year. Like you and Mom, a great commitment, and we love each other more every day. We have 4 outstanding children, happy, successful. They all graduated from college. They're all married. They all have wonderful families. We love our son-in-laws and our daughter-in-laws as our own. We have 7 incredibly talented and kind grandchildren. Our holidays are family of 17 is very close, and we celebrate life together. Birthdays, anniversaries, holidays are all special occasions. We have many close friends, enjoy traveling, and attend Bible-based church in Fort Worth. God has blessed us, and we give thanks for His love and grace and mercy. I've worked hard to make the most of life, and I hope you're proud of me. I look forward to the day when I can be together in heaven and we can talk the wonderful opportunities you and I have experienced. I love you, Dad, and miss you, Sid.
What do you think your dad's looking down on you and thinking right now?
I think he's smiling and saying, good job. Continue on. You know, we're very close family. I have a brother that's 7 years older, a sister 7 years younger. I'm in the middle. But we were very, very close. We always grew. We all grew up in Arlington, lived in two houses. So, you know, Dad was the leader of the family. He worked in Arlington. So it was, he's okay with this.
How important is community and giving back to community?
Well, I think it's pretty much everything. I think everybody owes something back to the community that helped raise them and their families and bring people along. Everybody doesn't have to do something big. It doesn't have to be big. Some of it's just respect. Some of it is just participation in voting or little stuff that takes place. Depending upon to what level you can, I think it's very important to give back to your community in ways that I've been able to do with Air Power Foundation, with the council, and with the things that we do. It also goes back to helping with the Medal of Honor and all. My dad was one of the people that helped bring in the Texas Rangers baseball back when they were the Washington Senators. That's giving back to the community or helping the community. And so I think today that that is something that everybody should, and most of the people that I talk to do, figure out some way to give back to the community.
What warms your heart more, your earlier years or your later years, and why?
My later years, because I can appreciate things more now. Don't get me wrong. I had great memories, great times, great everything back then. All that brought me up to now. And I think I've made good use of that experiences back then. And so what warms my heart now, what I do from a volunteer standpoint, what I do from a family standpoint, what I do with my grandkids.
Do you see yourself passing on what your dad instilled in you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Things that my dad had taught me and the shooting the gun. I've taken my kid out. I've taken my grandkids out. And one of the first things I did is take them out and throw a can out there and say, okay, shoot that can, you know. So that was one of those things that you reflect back on. Dad, son, talk. We go out. I did take him out hunting one year, deer hunting. We went in the evening. We got in a deer blind, had our guns and all. And he said, okay, Dad, deer come up. I'm going to be ready to shoot it. And I said, okay, well, wait till I tell you. Okay. Boy, these beautiful deer came up. And I was like a photographer. I was in awe of these deer. And I said, those are the most beautiful deer. And the buck came up. And my son saying, Dad, let's shoot him. I said, no. Let's watch them. And boy, my son got so mad at me. He said, you let some of the best deer in the world go by. I said, yeah, but you got to see some of the prettiest deer in the world. You can hunt on your own with me. We're going to enjoy the nature and enjoy what's out there. It was kind of an interesting way to let him know there's other things about being out in nature, appreciating what's out there without having to be the hunter. So when he built his house in Aledo, and he's on a few acres out there, the first thing I got him was I got him a deer feeder. And so he puts that deer feeder out there, and we sit out there and watch those deer come by all day and all night long, and he appreciates that so much. That's one of those lessons of be patient, enjoy what's there, enjoy the nature and what's being brought in front of you and to you. Teach your son and your grandkids to honor what they say, their integrity, being a good role model. I think role model tells more and teaches more than words. My kids see me, they see Lou, and they see how we act and what we do, and they pick up on that. I think my parents setting examples of being good husbands and wives and how they took care of each other and their commitment to each other was passed along. The same thing with Lou's mom and dad. And so that's been passed along to us. And I think our kids see that same thing in that you make things work.
I cannot thank you enough for sitting down with me. And always a pleasure. I can't thank you enough.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you, Jeremy.
Appreciate it.
Thank you to our guest, Sid Epps, for reminding us to embrace life's opportunities. Help SID support our veterans, Gold Star families, and Medal of Honor recipients by visiting airpowerfoundation.org. Rounding out our Military Appreciation Month will be an NFL playing Navy SEAL and a Vietnam vet who spent 6 years, 3 months, and 2 days as a POW. Thank you again for all of the love and support. We appreciate each of you. Last Letters is hosted by Jeremy Locke, executive produced by Scott Repberg, original score by Michael J. Leslie. Special thank you to the Blinded American Veterans Foundation, Stars of Hope USA, Cancer Blows. Tune in every Tuesday for a new Last Letter. Thank you for listening.